mal den Sprecher rein.
So, hi. I'm your herald. And I'm happy to announce Jonathan Eibisch. Currents, controversies and paradoxes in anarchism. He's been in talks about politics in RC3 before. And now it's about a new scoop. And it's great because he knows what he's talking about. He's teaching at the University of Jena. On his website, he says he's for an anarchism that's pluralistic and inclusive, a pragmatic one, undogmatic one. He wants an anarchism looking for concrete utopias. So yes, I'm very happy to present a utopic talk and a warm welcome to Jonathan.
Hallo, schön, dass ihr
Hi. Nice that you're here to this talk, Currents, Controversies and Paradoxes in Anarchism. I'm Jonathan. I thought about these topics a lot and about theories in anarchism. I wrote a doctoral thesis about this. And of course, this will be a bit more complex, and I hope you'll still be able to follow. And if you watch the video afterwards, if you watch the recording, then you can stop and have a closer look at the slides. So what is anarchism? I think it's several different things. And I would say it's a perspective at how do we look at the world. And this is how I imagine it, that you can get this perspective, go through this door, and anarchists, they have this view of the world and relationships to other people. And yeah, I invite you to just follow me a bit and try to see this new perspective. And thanks also for the stage that allowed me to have this talk. The CCC couldn't happen in person this year, but still this remote event, and it's great. So you probably don't know many people like me who sit down or just stand up and say, yeah, let me tell you something about anarchism or anarchy. And there's a lot of reasons, because it's about how the left-wing scene works, how anarchy was adapted, there are historical reasons, and that's a whole topic for itself. But you could also say that the whole group, it's a marginal group. In Germany, at least, there is not that many. And it appears to be part of the left-wing group. And it could be said that it's part of socialism. But even there, it's a marginal group. And there might be partial overlap with radical left-wing. But I'm not sure that makes so much sense, because anarchy rejects the whole parliamentary view, and that's where left-wing and right-wing comes from. But yeah, we can say that it's part of socialism, and it's a subcurrent of that. And at least in this country, it's more or less what we see as left-wing. And if we then compare to the whole society, then it's really not many people. Of course, it's just a symbolized picture. And that doesn't mean that it's irrelevant. But it can make sense to use this lens to understand the society as a whole a bit better. So if I talk about anarchy, then it's not just a set of interesting ideas or just a dream, a pipe dream, how it could be. Not just a gut feeling, but it's a very specific subgroup of people who live these ideas. And here are some historical anarchists and a few more. And you see, it's quite many, actually. And this is from a French webpage where they had several thousand anarchists, their names and some biographies, and I was surprised how many there were. And some are quite well known because they wrote something, and then you can quote them. And this is not about you knowing all of them. Some biographies might be interesting, though. But it's just to illustrate that what I'm talking about is about concrete people and specific people, and not just some abstract idea. Here you can see what I was hinting at earlier, that anarchy or anarchism is one of the main currents of socialism, next to party communism and social democracy. So one of the three bases, basically. And where party communism is about a political revolution, they want to overtake the state apparat and the government. And social democracy wants to use parties to change society. But anarchy now says those are political movements. They want to use and take over political system. But other ways should be found. So more or less a grassroots movement from below that does not use government in itself, but creates an alternative to government. And depending on the space and time when it happened, there are different ways this could be turned into reality, especially in Latin America in the 20th century. But yeah, so it changes a lot. It could also be seen as a triad between ethical living, social movement, and political theory. So ethical living, that's a feeling. You want to rebel against injustice, against hierarchies, against authorities. But it's also thinking about honor that every person has, or dignity, and trying to also have other ways of living. And connected to social movement, anarchists want to organize life differently, decentralized, autonomously. And those are ideas that were developed in the history. And of course, it's also a political theory, and it's the only political theory that says it's desirable to have a life form and to have a social life without government. And basically, they're the only ones that say, yeah, we can live without government, not just because they want that or because they don't like the government, but they actually say it's possible and desirable. And also now we are talking about the theory in anarchy, or at least a certain interpretation of anarchistic theory. I just want to say, to really stress, that if I talk about this theory, it's always connected to experiences that I had, that other people had, and that's connected. It's not just some mental building. So how can we connect theory or even science and anarchy? I think there are these six options. We can say, well, science looks at anarchy. For example, historic science. But it's still distance. It's the subject of scientific discourse. Or maybe there's, for example, me, and I give talks about this topic at university. I probably won't, but then there's these paradoxes. So I am part of a hierarchy there, and anarchists working within the scientific complex are then confronted with these paradoxes. But then you can combine it with other sciences, for example, anarchistic geography or ethics. And especially in the last 20 years, that was coming up a lot. And if it makes sense or not, well, we'll have to see, but it's coming up. But we have to see what is the difference between these disciplines from others, for example, feministic history or others. Then there was this idea to have a scientific anarchy. So similar to a more or less scientific socialism or communism from Karl Marx, they wanted something like that. And I would say there is a point there. The complexities of society have to be understood in order to handle them, but I still think that a social movement is mostly an ethical and political project that should not be based on the last truths, but what people really want and feel as a truth. And yes, it's true that you have a scientific foundation and how the world really is, and we can get information from the sciences, but in itself, it's not a scientific project. There is not this one rational society that we can build. Then there can be a scientific critique of anarchy, and it can be analyzed, and it can be shown how who is creating knowledge and who does it serve and how does it work. But there's also, so there is an critique of science, but also a scientific critique of anarchy. What I'm doing here is actually a scientific view on anarchy, but as an anarchist, I am also involved in it myself. And that's an interesting conflict within myself, but I think it's productive. So you have a few ideas how it could be viewed.
There's a few theories that are especially interesting for anarchism. From Peter Kropotkin's and David Graeber's, who were very active in different thematic areas such as ethics, economical theory, state theory.
Geschichte sozialer Bewegung, vielleicht auch Soziologie. Also das sind schon einige Disziplinen, die alle ineinander zusammen spielen, würde ich sagen. Und was ich jetzt hier mache, ist vor allem die politische Theorie und auch Ideengeschichte des Anarchismus, die mit diesen anderen Feldern immer
connect political theory and political anthropology with those other fields. So that was the introduction, and now in my second part, I would like to talk about my motivation in talking to you about this. So what is my approach? It is a post-anarchist approach. That's just one way of thinking about things in order to find answers. It's nothing spectacular. It's just a mix of post-structuralist and anarchist theories in order to further develop anarchism. I refer to different scientific works from Jürgen Mümken, Richard Dane, and others, or Sol Human, theories of post-anarchism. This is the literature I work with. So post-anarchism is not something new in anarchism. It's just one way of thinking in anarchist terms. And as I said, it combines post-structuralists and anarchist theories. Post-structuralism isn't bound as much as Marxist theories, for example. It's about deconstructing anarchism in order to reinforce it and not in order to destroy it. For those who are into the topic, there's a criticism of essentialism, naturalism, truth, understanding of history, and which is supposed to be a straight line always. And modernism is also criticized, but not completely destroyed. So that makes it comparable to post-Marxism. So it's about creating complex theories and relationships of tension. For example, here you have the relationship of tension between politics and anti-politics, which I did a paper on last year. So I based my approach on another theorist, and here you can see the results. So when you look for alternatives, you reach fields like community, society, social questions, and in the end you have a projection of ultimate freedom, and those are searching movements, searching to realize ideas. And this is how you get to the paradoxes. So the question is anarchism itself a paradox way of thinking? Karl Marx, one of the first anarchists, was neither a worker nor an academic, and he based his theories, for example, of Kant. So it's based in philosophy. But what we're talking about here, or I asked myself a question, what if Marx is right and anarchism is a paradox way of thinking? So I asked myself, why not? Because there's a lot of other people, relatively well-known thinkers, such as Deleuze, Foucault, Castoriadis, John Stuart Hall, who was one of the founders of cultural studies, Judith Butler, co-founder of the queer feminism, or Sigmund Bauman, who was doing or Ernesto Laclau. Those are thinkers who reflected on society and found some interesting results and ideas that are close to anarchism. So what is a paradox? Paradox is derived from Greek para, which means anti, and doxa, which means opinion. So it's against the popular opinion. So it's against what is popularly believed. And it's surprisingly deviating from the popular belief, which I find is an interesting definition. So paradoxes surprise us, and they're the opposite of heterodoxy, which is just a deviating opinion. But paradoxes question our beliefs as a whole. So different expressions can be true at the same time without contradicting each other. But it's also about resolving contradictions. But real paradoxes can't be resolved just like that. They show how our world sometimes contradicts itself, because our mind is limited, but paradoxes challenge us to extended, and they're also related to dialectics. But they recognize the fact that there just aren't any answers to some questions. For example, the paradoxon between the individual and the group. So our personal interests and the interests of society. This paradox can only be resolved if we further develop society. It's also related to ambivalence and ambiguity, where you have inattention through. And I believe that anarchists like to jump into contradictions and reflect them. And only this reflection makes it possible to resolve paradoxes. So it's also not about rejecting truths as a whole. It's about questioning how they're found and whether they can be called valid. So I put up some paradoxes here. On one side, anarchists want to deconstruct or overcome government. This is true. This is a defining feature of anarchism. We wouldn't be talking about it otherwise. On the other hand, government uses power to establish itself. So you need power to overcome the power of the current government. So you're against power, but you need power to overcome the power that is in place. So that raises the question, what even is power? How can you obtain power in an emancipatory way? And how can you prevent governments from festering and becoming fixed things? And on another paradox then is that anarchism is concrete on the one hand, and on the other hand, it's very difficult to define it because it's an anti-authoritarian worldview. And how can you reconcile that? Is it a paradox? I would say no, because one of those expressions is based on false facts, because it assumes that anarchy doesn't have a history. So this is not something that I say, but there are many anarchist theories, and to say that anarchy is an anti-authoritarian worldview, I think that is an anti-authoritarian reflex. So I would say this is a false paradox. We also had this. Anarchists don't claim to own any truths. And on the other hand, anarchists do think that their ideas are more true, more practical, more right than those of their competitors. So is that based on a theoretical or political practical level? We have to look at the assumptions that are behind them. How do you understand leadership? And on the other hand, you have to see whether the two sides are on the same level. So, for example, if the different political movements are in competition, they are sometimes on different levels. So one last example. Many anarchists say that you shouldn't put out abstract utopias that are not based on real society, because this can become totalitarian pretty quickly. On the other hand, it is often said that you can't develop a believable vision just by criticizing what is already there. So there's the idea that we need visions in order to know where to go, but there's also different underlying assumptions. For example, that the emancipatory transformation of society must be connected to real societal relations. And then also that the totalitarian shift of paradigms is not hypothetical, but artificially created. And on the other hand, we have the implicit idea that you need to be believable in order to transform society. So I'll show you some more paradoxons, but at this point, this is a post-anarchist approach, and it's worth it to think about that. It can be interesting and lead to new ideas.
So here a longer quote that I want to read to you about a philosopher. By bringing to light disagreements or paradoxes between our assumptions, between our ideas and demands, the paradoxes provide important answers. If we want to have a life, if we want to lead a life that is mind-focused, we have to properly think. Further, paradoxes have conflicts within seemingly unproblematic parts of our lives. They force us to keep thinking how we want to view life, because they make obvious that two or three assumptions can be in conflict, and they push us into it. And they make obvious an apparent contradiction in a seemingly great argument. And I think that's a good idea about paradoxes in anarchy or anarchism. So yeah, let's further check the currents in anarchy or anarchism. So we were talking about theory and science, and then this post-anarchism that I follow. Because thinking in paradoxes and tension fields, I also think it's important to discuss how do people like me find their ideas. And that's also something that could be critiqued, and how can it be also followed up? And one question that's more practical is the plurality of anarchy. Because there are several currents in anarchy or anarchism, because as seen in this scheme, and you can pause here, there are a lot of different movements and currents. So at the top there are more individualized currents, and one of them is the anarcho-communism or the anarcho-syndicalism, and there are also others, mutualism, collectivism. It's not about putting everyone in a box or labeling everything and everyone, but it's just a description of all the developments and of all the currents of the ideas that happened. And when can we say something is a current? Well, as soon as there are different groups that call themselves something, when they are active, when they have their own publications, like blogs or papers, if they have their own vocabulary, what is an individual, what is society. So if they have their own definitions of these words, and if it's not just 10 or 20 years, but 100 years or more, and if some or all of those points are realized, then it is what I would call a current or a movement. Then this is about several different ideas that differentiate these currents and movements. So anarcho-communism is mostly about how to change society, and that is correct, but I would like to suggest a different way of viewing this, because they have a similar mode of action, and that is the tendency to want autonomy. So they want to leave governmental influence spheres, and because, of course, government is everywhere. There is no outside in society. You could move to an island, but then the government would be within you somehow, and also you want to change society. So as soon as you are within a society, government is everywhere. But it's not everywhere in the same force. So there is no totalitarian, because even though it is everywhere, there are areas in life where it's stronger and areas where it's weaker. So we can push it outwards and realize something else instead. And that is what can happen in anarchy and anarchism in different ways. So in individual anarchism or anarchy, it's more about the person themselves and how they can evade government. Then, of course, others try to only to really talk about neighborhoods more and groups, how they can evade, and syndicalism. It's about working against institutions and building their own institutions as seeds of a new society. And then there's the networking thought, how people can connect to each other and change society. Insurrectionalism, it's this attack on all forms of government and how to develop new forms of freedom. And then there is the communitary anarchy or anarchism, that's about moving outside and creating new communes. Those are different ways of doing things, and they might be mutually exclusive but might not be, but it's about autonomy. All of them have in common that they are about autonomy, and that's what we can understand when we think in paradoxes. Because anarchism is one thing, but it's also quite pluralistic. And if we accept this paradoxes, we can understand that. But it's not just about anarchism, but it's about plurality in all social movements. There's always people coming together that are quite different, and it's not just a splinter group, because it's people coming together and connecting. And of course, there are tensions, and they have to stand those tensions and these conflicts. And of course, there are arguments and fights, but that's a good thing, because it can help us grow, as long as it's constructive arguments and fights. And it has to be done with solidarity. And then, of course, the differences between groups and movements, they have to be accepted and honored. And you have to say, yeah, you come from a different background from me, with a different history, and I want to understand that, and yeah, we can critique each other, but the critique is about acts, and not just, yeah, you have a different background, so I critique you because of that. So we don't need a unity or an organization definition or actions. It's good to have differences, and it's good to have different definitions, actions, and organizations, but we need a common basis. So we need to coordinate in a way, and we need to connect to each other. So one idea there is the communism without adjectives, or a communistic synthesis. And they really ask, what are people doing? So next to this plurality and this common idea of autonomy, there are, of course, controversies. For example, debates that cannot just be resolved. And that can also bring anarchists to different places, so it can separate them. And yeah, we always start from a common society. And I have four of these controversies. One is quite classical, the tension field between individual and collective. So how can the individual be brought into a collective, but without force, without being forced into it? They need to want to do it. And yeah, I wrote some scientific text, and you can see it in the slide. And it's about the art of being in this together on your own and voluntarily. Then the second big controversy is about force. It's called the Gretchen question, because it always tends to separate people. If we say we want a society without force, without violence, and we can say, yeah, we don't want to use force or violence, and that's then the direction of anarcho-pacifism, and they say no violence at all. And then one way is to say, well, to just accept how we live isn't good enough. And that also reeks of privilege to just say, yeah, I'm staying out of it, because it's not always an option. So sometimes violence can be legitimate to have a social fight. And people who see it that way are more closely related to the insectualism. But there are a lot of positions in between, of course. But yeah, it's quite the controversy. The third big controversy, it's a bit more complex. I called it anti-metaphysical line here. It sounds very complicated. It isn't really. So we have a society that brings us apart, it tears us apart. We are not close to anyone, we are not close to nature or what we create. And Marx explained that quite well. And one reaction of many people is that people want to feel connected to themselves, to nature, to anything. And that's the field that religion often uses, that picks up people who feel disconnected. And then, of course, anarchy usually disagrees with religion and also spirituality. But on the other hand, there is people who say, yeah, spirituality in itself, so looking for a sense or reason in the world, is a good thing. And it should be mentioned that not all anarchists come from the West. And there are indigenous people in the US, for example, who also bring in their own spirituality. So here again, there is all positions, even religious anarchism. And the fourth big controversy that I dug up is understanding of nature and technology. And here you can also have different views. What is nature? What is technology? On the one hand, you can say, yeah, no technology, no civilization, a certain primitivism. People who say, yeah, the trouble is not just capitalism and all that, but all technology destroys nature. But on the other hand, we have people who say, yeah, we like technology. People with a high affinity. It's often called cyber anarchism, and that's quite closely related to the hacker society. And again, we have the question, is government automatically connected to technology, and it's not an answered question. It has to be debated, and there is different possible standpoints. In the end, the point is to say that we live in a complex world we have to handle, but we also live in a society with inner disagreements. So we cannot say that nothing matters, but we can also not become fundamentalists, because that's also a product of a weird world we live in. How can we live with that? And how can we not, on the one hand, become liberally tolerant, or just arrogant know-it-alls who pretend to know everything? There are controversies and different standpoints that we have to accept to be able to grow together. And it's not just a utopia that I think, not just a pipe dream that I think that it would be nice, but I really, what motivates me is really the question, how can we have a successful social movement that actually changes society in a libertarian social way? And that should be the anarchistic demand. And of course, government is quite strong right now, and a lot of people work against it, and there are many troubles. But yeah, we are working for a libertarian society.
So, plurality within anarchism deserves explanation, because it's not self-explanatory. And I argued that there's a mode that connects different trends in anarchism, and with these big controversies, they can be resolved because they are a product of the society we live in. So society is needed as a tool to resolve them. So what is the actual anarchism about? I talked about the field of tension between politics and anti-politics, between utopia, ethics. I've got a whole presentation on that, which you can look at in the on media.ccc.de. And there's also my presentation on anarchy between chaos and cosmos. I found this analogy because children, people aren't always like this child in the chaotic room, but sometimes they also like to bring in order. And you also know this from your home. You construct something and then you have to sort it again. This is something people just do, to sort people, to construct. And both also is a part of anarchism. Anarchism brings chaos, questions the status quo, and brings disruption, especially in times like today. It's very important to question things and to disrupt things. And on the other hand, anarchism is about building a society, building a world. And within this tension, chaos and cosmos, you have self-organization, concepts of self-organization, structures that sort themselves, that can be developed and that don't need to be enforced, but are created by voluntary association. So this is a principle in anarchist thinking, and it continues in the tension between anarchy and libertarian socialism. our reforms of society haven't fallen from the sky. They've been developed in painful processes. We're living in a kind of liberal democracy. That means you have certain rights and freedoms that people fought for, and that's very important because it's better than an autocratic regime like in Russia, in Turkey, or in China, where there's oligarchs that define the fate of the country. But we can always fall back into autocracy if we stop fighting for our human rights. So this is a permanent struggle. But anarchists don't want to defend liberal democracy in order to prevent the decline into autocracy, but they want to change it into libertarian socialism. So that people have what they need in order to produce and become equal and have participation in concepts that apply to them. And in the society we have today, we just don't have that. And that is what anarchist philosophy is about, to make that possible. And libertarian, because it's not enforced by the state, but from the bottom up. So the question is, how do you get from a liberal democracy towards a libertarian socialism? And to have a qualitative difference. So as emancipatory people, we need to focus on that. It's decisive, especially today, to make it more logical, more palpable, to say we're the big reset, we can do it, we can transform society. We could change society. But now we have the interesting tension with anarchy, because even if we say society is transformable, the new society will again be questioned. Anarchy will always question the system in place, because there will always be suppression, there will always be problems that persist. So it's decisive that anarchy questions authorities in place by principle, so that they don't become set in stone. So this is the field of tension between anarchy and the libertarian socialism. It's a process that is ongoing and that we can push in different directions. Another paradoxon is the concrete utopia. Concrete utopia is supposed to be a mix between abstract and irreal politics. I talked about abstract utopia. It's a problem, or anarchists view it as a problem, because we have a utopia, and if we want to fulfill this utopia, we have to enforce it, we have to force it upon others, or it will just remain a utopia. And on the other hand, there are people who say, this is why we need to stay within real politics. A concrete utopia is something in between. It says, yes, we need a utopia, but it's more of an orientation. For example, there's a very good book by Eric Olin Wright, Real Utopias, who has a strong way of anarchist thinking. where he analyzes the Mondragon cooperatives in Spain, which is a workers' collective, or Wikipedia as an open source, non-commercial encyclopedia, where people were also able to realize a utopia without much hierarchy. So those are concrete utopias that we can orient ourselves at. And they don't need to be perfect, they just need to be examples to look at. And we can also have that in intermediate spaces. This is something that has been discussed strongly recently by, for example, Eva von Redeker. I think this is exactly the way of thinking in intermediate spaces. They are a mix between a purported totalitarianism, we say, well, society isn't total, but that doesn't mean that every alternative form is utopian just because you want a certain change. That doesn't mean it's anarchist and idealist. So it's about transforming society using alternatives, and this these are the intermediate spaces where society can be transformed, for example, in solitary agriculture. This is a concrete utopia as well. People are realizing different forms of working and cooperating. Or, it's very important that anarchy is squatting. In Copenhagen, for example, there's this house that was recently cleared out. It's a very well-known example where an alternative intermediate space was created. And direct action, in my opinion, is a mix between ethical and strategic acting. So it's about directly inflicting change. So it's founded in a certain ethics, but you also become active and intervene. For example, this is Castor Schottan. That was a protest against nuclear power and nuclear transports. That is direct action and a direct intervention in what is happening. So it's ethical actions that have direct consequences. Then social revolution as a mix between social evolution and political revolution. I also had a presentation 2 years ago at CCC, which you can watch in the on media.ccc.de. I might make it different today, but I stand with the point that this is something that can transform society in a targeted manner by not taking over the government, but finding alternative spaces of actions. Coming back to anarchist transformation concepts, this is a whole different topic. Then we have deconstruction. So that's a mix between construction and negation. Both is important in anarchism, that we can create alternatives. So we can make difference, we can create different systems that are, for example, not patriarchal, but we will still be living in a governed structure, in a state. We can build our alternatives, but that doesn't change the overarching structure. And on the other hand, anarchism is about building alternatives and building new things. And that is sometimes difficult to reconcile, or it's portrayed as a big contradiction. But there's the abolitionist movement that says, for example, abolish prisons, defund the police. For many people, that's unimaginable today, because how would that be possible, a society without police? Most people can't imagine that. But it's actually reasonable. You can reasonably argue that these institutions of the state do more damage than they do good, and that they have a different purpose than they pretend. They're not reintroducing people to society, but they criminalize poverty. In this abolitionist movement, there's a good way of uniting things. They don't want to abolish prisons completely, for example, but rethink security systems or structures. So thinking about what happens to people who exert violence, for example, how do we discipline them without using prison, for example, or violence? So that's a different, an interesting question, and it's between construction and negation.
And then, of course, the topic about what tools do we use to reach which goal? Of course, again, we have two poles. One would be the goal in itself. So, for example, people create structures, autonomous centers, as a mediate space where people can organize themselves, and after a few years, maybe this center is just there because it is. Then there is just subculture, and these concepts are nice, of course, but the main reason for its existence is no longer there, because it was once produced or created to reach a goal. And then, of course, the goal, the goal or the purpose justifies the means, because there's people who say, well, the purpose justifies the means. Anarchists don't really think that. They think it should be appropriate. But yeah, we always have to rethink what are our goals, what are our means. And it always has to be re-justified and has to be rethought. And it changes on the way that we go. And lastly, something I called Convergergard, so analog to an avant-garde. So not going ahead, but moving with others. So anarchists don't want to just look in from the outside, but they want to join in. So what's the role of anarchists? So they don't just want to watch, but they don't want to lead either. So I think they want to motivate, they want to organize and help, especially those people who are not privileged. They want to inspire libertarian and socialistic. They want to lead those fights, or not lead, but they want to do those fights. And they are emancipatory, so reduce government and bring them, do that in a self-reflected way. So I called this concept Convergergard, analog to an avant-garde. So all this I was talking about, it's about thinking and acting in dissonance and tension. So it's a bit abstract for many of you, maybe, but I wanted to illustrate the thinking that might help us understand anarchism and is in itself anarchistic. So how do we think about the world? How do we understand the world? And I think that's a basis for changing it and emancipatory. In thinking within contradictions and tensions, it's important for people who work or are active in social movements. And yeah, to reduce government and overcome it finally, it's difficult, but that's the task of our time and it's worth it to fight for it. And people in the world, worldwide, do it. And they have a good history behind them. But of course, modern societies are quite complex and the world is big. And that's just a truth, it's just a fact. And I would wish that more people just accept that and learn to handle that. Social movements are pluralistic and that's good. And we, if we want to be successful, we have to combine many people and bring them together. And we also want a qualitative growth. And that's just possible when we discuss and trade out our differences without sacrificing the pluralism. But also talking about the goal is always important in anarchism, because it's about reaching a pluralistic society. So people have to be self-governed in a way. So it's about it's against a liberal or libertarian multiculturalism where people are pitted out against each other, but it's also against a nationalistic homogeneity, because yeah, it's against this where a nation is seemingly all the same. We want many different life forms connected. Yeah, so contradictions are just a direct result of government. So there is a state, and the state is contradicting an autonomous society. There is capital, and then there is work for money. There is gender, there is patriarchy. So there is hetero men against everyone else. There is race. There is the distinction between culture and nature. So this is also about government, and this is some part of our life, and we have to overcome this. And my thinking that I developed is meant to help with this, with overcoming this. So it's not about just mixing everything. It's not supposed to be a mixture of socialism and capitalism and state. No, we want to overcome state and government and patriarchy and abuse of nature. But in order to be able to overcome all this, we have to understand how we can live in a society, or how we do live in a society that's full of contradictions. And how we can do this without going over the way, going the way of fundamentalism, we need values and also theoretical foundations. And there's a lot of words, a lot of vocabulary that I'm not talking about here. I did so in a talk last year. There was some written word about all these vocabulary and how these concepts exist and how many they are and what they are. And there is plenty more than what I'm talking about now. And those values, those ideas, these foundations, they are all connected. And you can understand it as a collection, but it has a purpose to integrate an undogmatic ideology. So it's a toolbox. And that can be the basis and the foundation for a pluralistic and autonomous social movement that people can become active in. And it includes radical and emancipatory practices. For example, this can also include tax. Yeah, and I now want to also provide some cornerstones, maybe some connection or some ideas I want to repeat that. So anarchism is something specific, not just an interesting philosophy with nice ideas, no master plan, but a worldview. And I am quoting other people before me now. So I see where anarchy is lived. It's not perfect. It's not just nice. But it is what it is. People are looking and they want a different society. With the necessity that something changes fundamentally. And it's always a society that has that people have to keep questioning. So anarchy is real today in people that try to reach it, that get inspired by it, that make experiences with it. Then the second point, the post-anarchism, it's a theoretical idea or approach to renew anarchism and discuss it anew. Doesn't mean it's better than all other approaches, but it's one approach that can lead to certain revelations or ideas. It also needs a theoretic work with it to renew anarchism and keep it relevant. The third point is that anarchism is within itself a pluralistic current or movement. And the branches have a common mode in that they always tend to try to reach autonomy. So they try to remove government and provide and realize alternatives. That's where they overlap. They should act together to reach more, all in all. And that can be reached by thinking in paradoxes, for example. The fourth point was where I talked about controversies. They can't just be removed, because they are a result of a controversial society we live in, be it the understanding of spirituality or technology. And there are a lot of differences or apparent differences and controversies. And yeah, we should argue here, but it's important that we respect different positions and learn to accept them and and grow together. The fifth point was about many theoretical concepts in anarchism that can be true at the same time, and we call them paradoxes. And it's not an accident, but it's related to a certain anarchistic way of thinking and acting. Specifically, it's the case that I already have this approach of paradoxes and tensions, and so I can work with this idea of paradoxes, and I can discover this way of seeing it. But even without the post-anarchistic approach that I developed, it makes sense that it comes back again and again. This thinking in media rooms. So there are mixtures coming, combining different poles, but it's never done. So the paradoxes, they remain. There's not this one solution that's done. For example, with a goal and means, and the purpose and the means discussion. So the goal can, but doesn't need to include the means. And it remains open. It remains an unsolved question. And it gives us a certain flexibility, but also as a consequence, that we have to orient in a longer term view and to change the society. And this is the last point. Anarchism can be understood as thinking and acting in discrepancies and tensions. And this shows emancipatory alternatives and allows us to critique government. And we gave a set of ethical values and principles of organization, and this allows us to act without becoming fundamentalist or arbitrary. And this is necessary to change society in a libertarian, but also egalitarian way. So I hope that you could take out a lot for yourselves. You gained a lot of understanding. Yes, it was quite theoretical, but it was inspired by experiences. And I think it's important to also think about things, to have a theoretical background, because it changes and society is complex. And everything I come across, I collect in a blog. You can see the link here. And I put everything on there. So check it out if it interests you. And thank you for listening. I wish you a good start into the next year. And see you soon. Thank you and goodbye. Yeah, so thank you for all the helpers who provided technology and organization. You can find the literature as well.
All right, that was Jonathan Eibisch with... Oh, I'm hearing an echo. So that was Streams, Controversies and Currents in Anarchism. Luckily, here in the direction, we had time to adjust our hair and get thinking. So now let's go to the Q&A. Jonathan, what I was interested in the talk is you presented an extremely complex way of thinking that goes beyond what our usual expectations of anarchism. It's a very complex structure. So, Jonathan, how did you get into that rabbit hole? Yeah, it's interesting that you worded that way, because a friend of mine also recently called it a rabbit hole. And I would say, yeah, it's been my position for quite a long time, but I wanted to found it on some theoretical foundations. Sadly, there isn't much anarchist theory in Germany, so I combined two passions. Historical anarchism and, on the other hand, political theory that is oriented at the current time and reflects important questions on a higher level. For example, plurality in social movements. Everyone has their own truths, but that doesn't change society. We need debates on a level playing field. This is a very practical question that moves me and that I try to think about. So you don't learn anarchism and become it. You are an anarchist and then you root yourself in theory. Yeah, maybe. I don't set a focus on whether people call themselves anarchists or not. It's nothing spectacular. It's just a position that I have. And it's, well, anarchism is a strategical means to label yourself. And it goes along with certain arguments, and there are certain very good arguments. So could I accidentally be an anarchist without knowing? Yeah, that could be the case. But if you have the feeling that you might be an anarchist, I implore you to look further into the theory, for example, the points I raised. But there's also practical approaches, people who very practically do things that you can get inspired by. So I don't care how you label yourself, and if you, well, if your position is different, that is totally valid. But at least you've questioned yourself and educated yourself? Are there diagnostic criteria for being an anarchist? I don't have a questionnaire ready, like in rate from 1 to 5. Well, personally, I do believe in certain principles and values in anarchism, like equal treatment and equal opportunities, and wanting to change society in a way that ethical living is possible for anyone, and to reform the way we work, the way we are in relationships. This is these are fields where people may want to change and change in a certain way. So it's not about seizing power from the state and enforcing political reforms, but self-organizing. That is the anarchist way, I believe, even in the 21st century. So anarchism as a process and as a societal movement. Yeah, it also depends on how you define revolution. So not political revolution in a classical sense. Alexander Bergman had a brochure where he said that the whole barrier fights, that is old news. And he wrote that 100 years ago. So revolution is what we do in everyday life. It's an orientation. It's a direction where we want to go. So I found some very universal points in the points you raised. I believe that I know a lot of anarchists that don't realize that they're anarchists. So do you think popular opinion also contains ideas that are not anarchistic? Anarchist, definitely. Well, to say, for example, people aren't equal and that is why we need government. What a society without government would look like, I can't tell you either. But this is an orientation that anarchists tend to have. And to see it as feasible and desirable, there are many people who might deem it impossible or even undesirable. And that would mean that they are in contradiction to the society we live in. Well, isn't that the dark secret of our society? Our society doesn't want to be governed, but you find government everywhere. You could say that. In my view, it's about calling out government and labeling it correctly. So, especially in a representative democracy, we have capitalistic tendencies, we have the nationalist definition of borders. So you have to name what government is. So people are free to say, I'm against this and against that, but naming the status quo is the first approach I would take, because opening up and making things transparent allows for criticism. So we would have to define what is government, because most Democrats, I think, would say democracy isn't supposed to be a form of government. It depends. I would say that it's being named very explicitly. For example, the US founding fathers did define it as a government by the people, for the people, and through the people that names government directly. But yeah, to define government, from my point of view, as a theorist, you shouldn't make it a moral discussion and say government is bad in all forms. Of course, government has negative impacts, so you should definitely criticize it from an ethical point of view, but it's also important to define it in a reasonable way and say that government is a relation, a structural relation that some people profit from and others are excluded from. Capitalism is an economical form of government where a select few have the capital and others have to work to make a living. Or the state as the institutionalization of government. So many people are in between. But to say it's a structural relationship and it shouldn't be a game of blaming, and you shouldn't draw short conclusions. And you have to acknowledge that people profit from relations of power, that other people suffer, and that we can improve things for a lot of people. So objective, and being anarchistic in an objective way and without raising too much tension. Yeah, that would be my conclusion of what you just said, to try to find a definition. Yeah, that's also my what I want for myself, because I don't want to be an ideologist. I have a certain conviction and imagination of the world and how it should be, yeah. But I would like to position myself and say, okay, there are ideological aspects, but you can never be neutral. Being neutral is a myth. So I would like to define my position. And of course, that gives others points of attacks to attack me. Okay, to come to an end, because we don't have much time. If you want to learn about anarchism, what should I read first? Do you have a favorite anarchist? Oof, I'm not prepared for that question. I have many. My favorite anarchist would be Malatesta, who wrote a book in 2013, Anarchist Intervention, or Emma Goldman, Anarchism and Other Essays. Those are some good classical texts I really like, but also Peter Kropotkin. There are many things that come to mind. Maybe you should read a book by Daniel Loic. He wrote an introductory book in 2017. This is one of the most current examples of literature. And yeah, that was basically an overview of what we have on the German market. So, Jonathan, you're my favorite anarchist in the room. How can I learn about you? So, we don't have much time. Do some self-advertisement. Yeah, paradox-a.de. That's my website, and you are free to contact me. Visit my events and lectures. Yeah, I had a look at the website yesterday, and half the website is just a list of basics, which I find really good. Yeah, you're welcome to click through it, and welcome to contact me. I promise I'll answer. So that was Jonathan Eibisch on anarchism.